Hello and welcome to High Performers. I'm Don Hudson. High performers are the men and women who consistently achieve above average performance. They stand out from the crowd because they're disciplined to do the things that create tangible, often remarkable results. Today on High Performance, we're talking about leadership in changing times. I once had the privilege of being on the board of directors of an organization called Sales and Marketing Executives International. The chairman that first year for me was an individual by the name of Herb Eagle. And in his talks around the world on sales, marketing, and leadership, he offered his definitions of those terms. And he said this about leadership. He said, leadership is the art of leading people astray with confidence. Well, it was always good for a laugh or a snicker, and he got into his more serious content after that. But I've got what I think is a better definition of leadership. It's one we came up with at U.S. Learning, and it goes like this. We believe that leadership is the art of using persuasive skills and or the power of position to influence the attitudes and behaviors of others toward exceptional performance. You see, I think leaders are the individuals who can handle change skillfully. They can go with the flow, they can roll with the punch. As the psychologists say, they have a high tolerance for ambiguity. You know, on the issue of rate of change, I had an interesting thing happen to me a while back. I got a phone call from a client who had hired me to address their annual sales meeting. And the senior VP who called said, Don, I know we've agreed on your title and you've got your content down. You've already done your needs analysis and talked with our people. But I got one more thing I'm going to ask you to weave into that speech. I said, well, my job is being valuable to my client. So you tell me what I can do for you. He said, Don, it's dealing with change. He said, it just seems right now we have more change going on than ever before. Frankly, we've got some people who are handling it well, some people who are handling it poorly. But I just wonder, have you got any material on how to handle change? I had to confess to him at that time that it really was not part of my repertoire. But I said, no problem. We've got 6 weeks, so I've got time to do a little bit of research. And I tell you what, by the time we get to that convention site, I'll have some material for that speech on how to handle change. He said, Don, that would be great. So now I've got an issue. I got to go do some research and find some speech-worthy material on dealing with change. Well, I was very fortunate. I found a white paper that had just been completed by a group of academicians on the West Coast talking about the dynamics of change. And that first topic on the rate of change was fascinating. They said, according to their research, that the knowledge mass of the human race from the year 1900 to the year 1950 literally doubled. Wow, lots of change. 5 decades, double the knowledge. I continue to read. They said at the time of their study that the knowledge mass of the human race was doubling every 5.2 years. Wow, an accelerated rate of change was obviously taking place. I, interestingly enough, heard a speech by Dr. Michael Cammy only a few months ago where he said that, according to his research, that the knowledge mass of the human race now is doubling every 4 years, soon to be every 3 years. More and more change is coming at us. The Conference Board report recently said that John Nesbitt, who authored the wonderful material on megatrends, even predicts now that the knowledge mass of the human race by the year 2020 will be doubling every 35 years. Days. Wow. How many of you are going to be ready for that? Lots of change. So we better master the process of dealing with it. So that brings us to the next key issue. How about our personal response to change? Well, my research indicates we essentially have 3 choices when it comes to response to change. One is we could be positive about change, and that indeed is my recommendation. Hey, let's roll with it. Let's deal with it. Let's learn from it. Let's grow from it. If we're not positive, the other 2 choices, we could be negative about change, and I don't recommend that. There's too much change out there. We'd be negative all the time. The other alternative is we can be apathetic about change. Well, as you know, apathy means who cares. I do not recommend an apathetic response. Makes me think of the old man who was asked the question, tell me, sir, which is the biggest problem in our society today? Is it ignorance or is it apathy? The old gentleman thought for a moment and said, I don't know and I don't care. Well, hey, we got to know what we're doing today and we've got to care about the outcome, don't we? So we don't want to be apathetic. We don't want to be negative. The ticket is let's be positive in our response to change. Now, the next thing we need to talk about related to this thing called change is the difficulty with implementing change ourselves. You see, change can be tough for us because we are all creatures of habit, aren't we? It can be a very difficult thing. When I say we're creatures of habit, let's face it, the easiest thing to do today is the same old thing we did yesterday. It's like we've got these little grooves in our brain that induce us to just do what we've always done. It's habitual. You know, for example, a simple change like moving your waste paper basket from the right side to the left side of your desk. With a simple change like that, you will probably throw paper on the floor for 21 days. Maybe 3 or 4 months for some of you. But the point is, we are creatures of habit. And habits are indeed very strange commanders, but they are commanders of our very destiny. So let's make sure we've got good habits. Let's change when we need to change. Let's be responsive to the opportunities that change can present. I like the line that says, when we deal with change, we've got to remember that the pain not to change exceeds the pain to change, and we will indeed make the change. If it hurts enough, we'll change. Sometimes if the pain isn't there, we just go with what we've always done. So let's embrace change. Let's make it a part of our proactivity as skilled leaders and as people who are trying to make some positive things happen in the midst of our quest for the highest possible performance. Now, when it comes to leadership, we've got to make sure that we see the big picture. I think we've got to have the vision. I'd like to draw a little illustration for you and kind of work through this model with you. And we could say that we've got vision up here at the top. And vision is the key factor. That's going to be the driver of what we're doing and hopefully where we're going and what we're achieving. Now, as we move around a circle down here, we've got another component we're going to call current assessment. Now, our current assessment is a realistic evaluation of where we are right now. As we move around the circle right here, we've got another element over here we're going to call the action plan. So essentially, we've got three elements to what we call our vision model. We have the vision itself. That's the picture looks like when things are working well. That's where we want to go. That's the goals that we want to achieve to get there. We've got current assessment. That's where we lean back and we take a look at what we've got to do to figure out exactly where we are and what's going on right now. And the better job we do of assessing the situation, the better job we're going to ultimately do of getting successfully through this model. Over here, we've got the action plan. That's what we're going to put in place to make the vision become a reality. You know, when I do this in speeches, I love to ask my audience members, where do we start in this model right here? Well, I point here and some of them say, yeah, that's where we got to start. We've got to have the vision if we're going to reach the vision. Well, that's one place we could start. Also, some people say, well, we could start with our current assessment. Figuring out where we are right now, well, that could be viable. I say, how about here? Do some people want to start here? One guy recently said, yeah, well, hey, you can. I don't advise it. That's what we call the ready, fire, aim people. They're starting, and they don't know where they're going yet, and that can be problematical. So I say it's okay to start with a vision. It's okay to start with current assessment, but we don't want to start right here. That's where we're going to end up in terms of implementation, right? Let me give you one more word that I want to tie into the dynamics of this model right here. And the word is one I'm going to write right up here in the corner, and the word is reconcile. You see, at this point right here, we need to always reconcile any divergence between the action plan and the vision. In other words, if the action plan is taking us in this direction, we need to regroup. We need to either change our vision or we need to change our action plan and the components made up of it. If it's taking us somewhere else, we've got to, of course, regroup. So the recommendation is that anytime we are at the action plan phase, we're taking action, carefully monitor and always reconcile this situation to be sure that the action plan is taking us exactly toward the vision we want to achieve. And if we'll do that, that can be a viable model. You see, the strong leaders are the men and the women who get these components in place, and then they get people fired up and passionate about following the vision, about buying in. So that's an example of what we've got to do, I think, as an early stage in our leadership task and challenge to really be the best we can be. So how are we going to get it done? What's our process for greatness in leadership? Well, I think we got to have the right kind of leadership style to pull that off. You know, there's an interesting thing. I'm going to write a couple of more words up here I want you to key on for a second. One of the words is compliance. And the other word that I want you to think about for a moment is the word commitment. Commitment and compliance. Now, there's an interesting thing here. If we were to draw a line right here, we could say leaders and managers want to do everything they can to get compliance from their people. They want their people to be doing the things that they need to be doing to be successful. We got to get those activities in place, have them properly coached and led and managed and so forth. Compliance. We want them to comply with the appropriate guidelines. But we want them to do so and also give us their commitment in the process. In other words, the great leaders want compliance and commitment. Now, here's the rub about leadership style. Every now and then you see a man or a woman whose leadership style is abrasive. They have a real problem being nice about their leadership task. And they say, you're going to do this and you're going to do that because I'm the boss. In other words, what they're doing is they're using all position power and no finesse. One of the big and common problems we make in leadership today. Now, as we think about compliance and commitment here, let's remember, we want to get compliance along with commitment, never at the expense of commitment. Here's the problem. With the wrong leadership style, we can get compliance, but it is so often at the expense of commitment. And we don't want that to happen. On the positive side, have you ever had the opportunity to work for or with a boss or a leader who was so skilled in their leadership style that for that boss, you would walk 5 miles, you would swim 3 creeks, you would crawl through 6 blocks of broken glass just to do that boss a simple favor? Have you ever worked for someone like that? Well, you know, there's some people out there like that. You'd follow them anywhere. You're responsive to their leadership style. You see, those are the kinds of leaders who invariably get the compliance, but they also get the commitment of their people. They got both going for them, and that's how we create organizational momentum, is by being the kind of leader that gets compliance and commitment. Hey, they're buying into the vision. They're fired up about it. They're doing what they must be done to make positive things happen. So I think when it comes to the leadership style, we need to make sure we're doing the things that indeed make the best difference in trying to achieve that mark. So what about leadership style? In terms of leadership style, most people develop it without a great deal of forethought. They basically are doing the things that they have learned and seen and observed from other leaders that they've had in the past. Now, is that bad? Not necessarily. Maybe they've had some good leaders and things are working really well for them and they've learned some good things. But most of us pick up our leadership style by osmosis. It just kind of happens. And I don't think that's the best way to develop a solid, high-performance leadership style. I think we need to do it with a great deal of forethought. We need to do it with some really sound planning. And we need to do it with some on-purpose behaviors that are going to take us in the right direction. Now, let me give you a little history on leadership style that I think you'll find to be thought-provoking. One element is what we used to call Theory X. You've probably heard that one. Dr. Douglas McGregor did much of the early research on that. And Theory X is a leadership style. It's what's known as the autocratic style. That's the one I alluded to earlier. You're going to do this and you're going to do that, and they manage with an iron hand and a steel fist. And these people are tough. If at any given moment, hey, they might be leaders, they might be tough managers, but if at any given moment they look behind them, they might not have too many enthusiastic followers. They only have followers who are under duress because of an inappropriate, too tough leadership style. I'm not saying we should never go there. Maybe sometimes we have to. But that does not need to be our principal model for leadership style. I say let's stay away from Theory X. As our next discussion point, let's talk about Theory Y as a leadership style. It's participative in nature, can be far superior to Theory X. Theory Y is when the manager, the leader, finds out what other people in the organization think. And they talk to their people, their subordinates, and they ask their opinions, and they gain consensus from them many times. And there's a give and take in communications that tends to be a great contributor to positive morale. So Theory Y, the participative approach, can be very, very positive in terms of the results we can gain. Now, you've also probably heard of Theory Z. That's known as the Japanese style of management. Years ago, Dr. William Uchi wrote a book entitled Theory Z, the Japanese Style of Management. And it was an excellent book, and I learned some things from it. It had some really good points in there. I will say, however, that as far as the North American culture of doing business is concerned, Theory Z is a little bit tough for us because our cultures are so different. So I would suggest, hey, read the book. You'll learn some things, but let's stay with what we're most comfortable with and what works well in our society. Now, beyond X, Y, and Z, I've put together what I call Theory H as a leadership style. This is a compilation of the ideas that I have found work best in terms of managing and leading people for high performance. So let me give you the 8 key points on Theory H. Number 1, walk around, interact, be available. Hey, talk to your people. You know, there's nothing worse than the manager who comes to the office, the leader who goes into his or her office, they close the door, and they stay there for hours on end. We call these the stealth managers. They're there. You just can't see them. Well, let's don't be a stealth leader. Let's get out. Let's talk to people. Let's walk around. Let's interact. Let's find out where they're coming from. Let's make sure the communications flow is excellent. I've always been a bear about communications. I think it's okay to over-communicate. It's just not okay to under-communicate. And communications has got to be a proactive process, right? Now, another part of that walking around, interacting, being available that's so critically important is a little component I call LAZ. I actually learned this in one of Ken Blanchard's books. Ken is a wonderful leadership trainer, speaker, author, good friend of mine. We're currently co-authoring a book, and Ken talks about LAZ. He said it's the single lousiest means and manner of managing people in existence. He said LAZ stands for Leave Alone Zap. And here's how it works. You just leave your people alone. Let them do their thing until one of them screws up, and then you go zap them. He said that is the worst way going for managing and leading people. We're basically and essentially catching people doing things wrong. People need reinforcement. They need positive input. If you've read any of Ken Blanchard's works, you know that one of his principal thought lines is we've got to catch our people doing things right. And that is a great hallmark, a great sign of excellence in terms of leading and managing people. All right, so idea number 1, walk around, interact, be available, talk to your people. Be hands-on in that regard. The second component of Theory H is recognize recent achievements. You know, it really doesn't take any time or money to do it. You can just do it in short order. Charlie, thanks for the great job you did last week. Sally, you really bailed us out solving that problem yesterday. Thank you very much. You can say these things in a split second, and it can make all the difference in the world in terms of how your people feel about the job they're doing and letting them know that you're not taking for granted their contribution. Recognize recent achievements. Next, frequently mention visions and make them feel a part. That's a key and critical one. Mention the visions. You talk to them about the vision. You clarify where you're going with the vision, and you talk about how they are involved in making that vision become a reality. So frequently mention visions. Make them feel a part of it. That way it gets them eager about going into the future with you as their leader. The next part of Theory H is make promises reservedly, but always keep them. A recent report I read said that the number one reason why people voluntarily leave the employment of an organization is because they felt they were made promises which were not kept. Hey, when it comes to integrity, high character management, there's no substitute for that. The next one is critique performance when necessary. You know, use a basic and rather blunt example. If you've got somebody who's figured out a way to do something very negative or steal from you, for example, and it's February, you don't want to deal with that next November. You got to fix those things in a timely manner. So time is critical on critiquing performance. Let's make sure we do it when it's necessary. Let's do it in a timely manner. By the way, critiquing should never be always negative in nature. We need to try to give them some positives, cover the negative, give them some more positives. You always get more positive behavior change with positive critiquing rather than negative critiquing. All right, next component of Theory H is respect your people and their needs and ask what you can do. When you clarify that vision and the part that they play, can you say to them, you know, tell me what you need from me to be able to get everything done that we need to get done here. Ask them what you can do. They'll give you the feedback. They'll tell you what they need, and then do everything you can in terms of your leadership and coaching and managing activities to make sure you provide for them all the components they need to get the job done. The next component is reject pettiness. If you got people whose hobby is bringing petty issues to you, well, he said so-and-so and she said such-and-such and I didn't appreciate thus-and-so. Hey, if you embrace all of that and get caught up in it, guess what you're going to start getting more of? You're going to get more petty issues brought to you. I say reject the pettiness. Just say to your people, you know, I'm glad that I've got mature, competent communicators working for us around here who can deal with those minor issues. Reject it. Don't even get into it. Now, if it keeps coming back to you, then you must address it. But address it, get it done, move on. Don't dwell on petty issues. Next, build a strong, focused team. Have a great team spirit. Now, when we get into that great team spirit and that great concept of having a strong and focused team, remember, there's something about the team and the collective effort there. You know, you might be the smartest person in your organization, but you're not as smart as everybody on the team combined. That's what I like to call collective intellect. Collective intellect means all of the brain power of all of the team members. And none of us is as smart as all of us. Let's build a strong team with good interaction, with lots of competencies in there, with people doing the right thing, high integrity, high character, lots of discipline, lots of follow through, getting things done with great expertise. So that tells you my take on Theory H as a leadership style. Now let me tell you my best quotes I'd like to give you in terms of best practices from select experts. First, from Coach John Wooden, more NCAA basketball championships than any other coach in the history of collegiate basketball. He wrote a book entitled They Call Me Coach, and it was a wonderful book. But my favorite line in the book is this one. Wooden used to say, I would rather play against an A team with a B coach than play against a B team with an A coach. Wow, what is he saying? What he's really saying is leadership is what makes the difference. The coaching is what matters. The next quote I'd like to give you is from Jay Beecroft, who was the training director of 3M Corporation for many years. He used to say that your people will respect not only that which you expect, but that which you inspect. You see, we don't want to necessarily be micromanagers, but we need to keep a handle on what's going on. We need to expect results. We need to take a close look at the skills that are being utilized. We need to make sure that follow-through is taking place throughout the entire organization. Let's be hands-on to the need and to the degree that we need to be hands-on. Next, one of my favorite quotes is from Jack Welch, who for years was the legendary CEO of General Electric Corporation. He wrote a book entitled Jack Straight from the Gut, with all the bottom line ideas that enabled him to prosper for over 20 years as CEO of General Electric Corporation. One of my favorite ideas in that wonderful book, which incidentally I've read three or four times and I've gone through and I write in the margins and I underline and I highlight. It's just a wonderful book to devour on how to manage people for great success. One of my favorite Jack Welch ideas is, he says, anytime you've got a significant problem or you've got a major issue you're dealing with that's really important and you've got to get a number of people involved in the solution or in the development of the research, he said, you need to do a deep dive. Now, that's the term he used, the deep dive. He said that's when you identify very carefully everybody who is in the loop, and everybody goes deep with absolute and total focus in terms of their research of the problem or the issue. You establish a time frame for when you're going to come back for review of all the information gathered. And everybody is all over this because it's too important to let the decision or the research waver for too long. He says, we got to do the deep dive. Let's get involved in it and let's make sure we're gathering a great deal of information to take it to the next level. A great quote from Jim Collins, who wrote the wonderful book Good to Great, is make sure you've got the right people on the bus. Do you have the right members of the team in place and in the right positions? He implies you can be a wonderful and skilled leader. You can have a magnetic management style, but if you got the wrong people on the bus, great things are probably not going to happen. Another point was from Michael Cammy, wonderful speaker, world-renowned educator. Dr. Cammy says that you got to be sure you have the personal discipline for self-education. He said, we've got to make sure that we as managers and leaders continue to be students of management, of leadership, and of the key competencies that make a difference in our own jobs. It's a little hypocritical for us to insist that everybody else get a lot of education, lots of training, if we're not doing it ourselves. So one of the components and hallmarks of great leaders. Dr. Peter Drucker, who wrote over 20 books, renowned expert on management, said that no leader can ever be considered a true professional until and unless that leader makes provisions for replacing him or herself. You see, we got to get people in place. We've got to grow the organization. We've got to grow our people and get them ready to come in and make some great things happen in the organization as opportunities might open up for them. Another quote I love about leadership is from George Odierno. He says, make sure that you never sanction incompetence. When you observe something that needs to be fixed, you need to do some coaching, do it and do it right now, says Odierno. He said, if you don't do it now, you are sanctioning incompetence, which is proof of your own. Pretty tough issue. Dr. Robert McMurray had a wonderful line that we as leaders and managers need to hear as well. He said, we've got to know about the dynamics of recruiting winners into our organization. He said, the number one factor considered by people who are recruiting others into an organization is the feeling of compatibility which exists between the interviewer and the interviewee. He goes on to say that is the single lousiest criterion going for picking winners. He said the number one criterion must be the study of, the observation of, the validation of, the understanding of that applicant's track record. You see, the odds are what a person has done, a person will do. Track record is what matters. Well, some of the questions I frequently get asked about leadership is, how do you turn an employee around who's not really producing? Well, that's one of the real challenges, isn't it? We need to try to be involved in a process of behavior modification. We need to identify what they're doing now, identify what they need to be doing, and then we need to deal with that skill gap proactively, in a timely manner, with good communications, and go for behavior change. People also ask me, what's the best way to get your team members to buy in? Well, one thing, you need to ask them for their buy-in. Remember that earlier point, frequently mentioned visions and make them feel a part? That's one of the greatest ways to get buy-in and to really make it happen. Well, I hope these ideas on management and leading people for high performance have been helpful to you. And thank you for watching High Performers today. I appreciate your being with us and hope these ideas help you on your quest for even more success.